Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Mark Belisles, and I had the privilege of co-writing a book with him about the faith of Thomas Jefferson, or the lack thereof, if you will. The book was called Doubting Thomas, The Religious Life and Legacy of Thomas Jefferson. Mark, welcome back to Vocal Point. Great to have you on again.
Well, hi, Jerry. Great to join you.
All right. Now, I feel like, in a sense, what the book set out to do, and I think we accomplished it, is number one, to show that Jefferson was not a lifelong skeptic, and point number two, to show that Jefferson did not believe in the naked public square. In other words, that there would be no religious expression in the public arena. And I think we accomplished those goals, but let's, for the sake of this discussion, focus on the religious part, especially, you know, in other words, that first premise. Jefferson, the lifelong skeptic, what prompted you to even write about and want to write about Thomas Jefferson and to kind of set the record straight that, no, he was not a lifelong skeptic?
Well, I think probably one of the most obvious things that about Thomas Jefferson is he's used today by so many people in sort of public discussions and in academic forums to try to portray the whole Founding Father generation as if they were more not coming from a Christian tradition, but more from a truly more Enlightenment, secular, you know, kind of European way of thinking about life. And so Jefferson, is more than any other one, is sort of the icon for that, mainly because of some of the things he said that I think show pretty well in our book, that is kind of largely out of context and limited, at least, to a very small portion later in life.
But those things are not ungenuine. I mean, they are real, and they're very problematic. And, you know, from an Orthodox Christian perspective, they're not good. You know,
very
but
true.
Yeah. Okay. So, but let's focus on, let's say, for now, the earlier part of Jefferson's life. There he did some things that most people have no idea about. Tell us about that church that he helped found as a layman.
Yeah, clearly one of the most overlooked of all the things in almost every biography of Jefferson you read, but yet clearly provable is in his writings you have this founding document of what was called the Calvinistical Reformed Church of Charlottesville, Jefferson's hometown. And right just 6 months after he authored the Declaration of Independence, he authored this founding document as a charter for the church, that where it was named that Calvinist Reformed Church. And in his own handwriting, you see these founding documents where, and then his signature as the leading donor to support this this church. And so that alone is very unusual. Is just that we have a founding father starting a church, but it was because of there was the end of the. And during the war for the revolution, there was things were changing, and this was unique also because the clergyman that was selected for this church was a lifelong friend of Jefferson's, but he's also unusual because he was an evangelical Anglican, very much influenced by the First Great Awakening.
And what's neat about the book, if I could say so myself, and by the way, people can get more information at doubtingthomasbook.com, not to give a commercial there, but our book actually contains in print for the first time ever some of the sermons, two of the sermons of the Reverend Charles Clay, this evangelical man that was a friend of Jefferson's. And how did that come about? Because you were the mediator on that. You're the one who found those notes, and explain that. And what do those sermons contain? What kind of information?
Yeah, over 50 handwritten sermons by Reverend Clay. Charles Clay was kept by the family for over 200 years in private collection. But just about 15 years ago, they finally first became known when they were donated to the Virginia Historical Society. So I was able to go and look and read these sermons. So here we have references to the courthouse of Charlottesville where this church was held during the revolutionary period. So that shows this founding document of Jefferson, really, of this church, actually did come into being, this church, and these sermons were held there by that sermon and by that minister. And these sermons that Jefferson supported, was paying for out of his own pocket, voluntarily, not required by law. These sermons sound very much like, if you read them, you know, sort of Jonathan Edwards type of preaching, very evangelical, kind of calling people to repentance and faith in Jesus Christ for, as their Savior.
So both evangelical and evangelistic. Okay, so let me ask you this. Okay, so he helped found this church in 1777, and as I say, you can read these sermons for yourself and see, you know, this is the kind of gospel ministry. That's what it was, gospel preaching ministry. You know, and in fact, one of those sermons talks about how, you know, the unbeliever is going to face God as an adversary. You know, it's talking about hell and damnation and so forth. I mean, it's right there in black and white. And this is a ministry that Jefferson supported. So here's my question for you. When Jefferson talked about God in the Declaration of Independence, which he was the first main author of, for example, thou by their creator, the laws of nature and of nature's God, you know, these kinds of references, could it be surmised that he's talking about the Christian God?
I think very clearly. I mean, in fact, so much of the language in the Declaration of Independence is found in these sermons, the terms of divine providence and things like that. They weren't references that, as is claimed by many academics, to just some sort of idea of God that was separate from the Christian tradition, but they were the very same kinds of terminology used by this evangelical Anglican preacher that Jefferson was listening to and supporting voluntarily with his own donations.
I did a little Google search of Jefferson, you know, speeches or whatever, and I saw some scholar, a Jefferson scholar, giving a speech. I believe it was at Monticello, and he was basically talking about how Jefferson was a deist. And I thought, you know, there's some merit in what this man is saying, but the overall thrust, and this is where I think people miss the point, is that Jefferson went through different stages in his life. And it's just not accurate to say that he was a lifelong skeptic. So put that in context for us and go ahead and wax eloquent. I'm just going to sit back and listen while you tell everybody about this stuff.
All right. Great. Thanks, Jerry. I think, you know, the way to understand Jefferson really is something that is not easy. People want simple answers. I'm afraid even sometimes not just those with their own secular agendas, but often we as Christians do as well. But to understand Jefferson takes a lot of understanding of context for letters and actions that he made, as well as just so much nuance to his statements. Sometimes very much Jefferson would be saying things that would be, you know, something that you know, might, you know, make people feel like he's almost anti, you know, anti-God, almost anti, you know, Bible, but there's so much context for understanding it. So this is one of the things we found, that sort of beginning there in his early stage of life, he's very strongly voluntarily supporting, actively attending, you know, these, you know, Bible-believing churches. In fact, throughout his entire life, he actually, there's evidence of him attending Bible-believing churches. He was always called himself, even to the very end of his life, a member of the Episcopalian Church, and he was. He proved as pastors both in Washington, D.C., clearly affirmed in letters there. He was a member of the church there, was even as president. And throughout his references, his life, you know, he speaks of God, a God answering prayer. He gives his inaugural address and things, like the God who led us, our country, like Israel of old. And a God who, he talks about being, one who will, you know, who will answer and deal with problems of slavery and things like that, that he fears that, indeed that our, you know, if we ignore that, our, you know, that will bring his judgments. There's so many references to this, personal references, Stephen Jefferson, so many times letters in private to family. He tells them he's, you know, going to offering his prayers for them. It's not just a show, even if he does something. So here's something then that we have to realize, that when someone claims Jefferson was a deist, they would have to ignore so many hundreds and hundreds of references to Jefferson personally saying he is praying to God of his donating to Christian churches, Bible-believing churches, and so many other activity like this. He attended church in the Capitol, supported it while he was president. So many other times he organized.
Can I stop you right here? Let's talk about the Capitol worship services. Most people don't know this. They don't know this, and they don't realize that Jefferson definitely approved of this. But from what, around 1800 until the 1880s, they had Christian worship services in the U.S. Capitol building because there were so few churches built at the time in this fledgling new city, Washington, D.C.
And indeed, and we have a letter, one of those letters that had never been published before. And so many, this part of what's, I think, so wonderful about our book is that we published also letters that had never been in print before in 200 years by any Jefferson publication. Hmm. And so here is, and one of those letters is him writing while president to the Senate chaplain in Washington, asking that the pulpit be open to what Jefferson calls his favorite preacher, which was a Presbyterian minister preaching the gospel there in the Capitol. Here's, you know, directly supporting a, you know, Trinitarian preaching, wow, you know, minister of the gospel. And so here's not just someone that he's sort of just, you know, supporting it kind of begrudgingly. He's actively helping to get preaching done there in the Capitol.
Can I stop you? I'm sorry for interrupting, but it's hard to picture the Thomas Jefferson that we've heard about, you know, for so many years, going to church on a regular basis and even going to church in the U.S. Capitol. I mean, what about the separation of church and state? Which is the concept those are from his own words.
Yeah, clearly people who portray Jefferson again take things out of context and leave out so much more information. And that's really what we do in our Downing-Thomas. We provide all the other information that most people ignore or just have never heard of, many of them. Never seen some things before. So, I mean, even Jefferson, there was one time in the courthouse, that same Presbyterian preacher, he called his favorite preacher, Reverend Glendy, Jefferson organized a time for him to preach at the courthouse, and this is in Jefferson's retirement years. And there, you know, you can just picture this. Jefferson is organizing preaching in his hometown in the courthouse, in a public place as well. So there's, so basically when we think of Jefferson, we hear people say he was a deist. We have to understand it's something that, first off, out of all the over 20,000 letters Jefferson wrote, not once did he call himself a deist. He referred to deism a few times, but not in a way that he identified himself with. He referred to as part of sort of those who kind of attack him. But he always called himself only one thing, a Christian or an Episcopalian.
Those were
his terms.
Didn't he once say a Unitarian or imply that he was a Unitarian? And also, I know in one of the letters he said, I belong to a sect of my own, or something like that.
He did say that. He said, I'm a sect to myself as far as I know. But when he said that in his retirement years, it was 1 year before the Episcopalian Church that had been defunct for over a decade without a clergyman finally came to town. And so then he immediately, as soon as the service was restarted in his hometown, he joined it. And he no longer was a sect by himself. He was calling himself an Episcopalian. He did also say, even while as a member of the Episcopalian Church and supporting that and attending that, the very last year of his life, he did refer himself as a Unitarian as well, although there's no such thing as Unitarian Church. He was still a Trinitarian Episcopalian member. Yeah. While saying the privately held to Unitarian beliefs. And that's clearly what everybody seizes upon in the biographies of these quotes that in the last 13 years of his life, where he makes some references to very strongly in favor of Unitarianism and rejects sort of that Trinitarian, you know, creedal understanding that we all agree is biblical today, but yet back then there was a lot of what we call sort of confusion. Even evangelical churches sometimes had thrown out creeds for a period of time because of their desire for unity. But Jefferson was caught up into that, and so he affirmed that in some of those last years of his life. But in saying that, it's something to realize not once publicly. He never once had a public statement of anything other than being a Christian, and he not once ever attacked Christianity, traditional Christianity, publicly in a single document. It was always, if anything, but a private reference to someone, strictly in private, as he was just discussing theology.
Huh. Okay, Mark Belisle, we're out of time. I'd like to talk with you later. Maybe we could talk about the Jefferson Bible. The name of the book that we've been talking about, and I had the privilege of co-authoring it with Mark Belisle, is called Doubting Thomas, doubtingthomasbook.com for more information. Mark, always a pleasure. God bless you, sir.
God bless you, Jerry. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Wait, Mark, let me redo that ending, because this will be airing after Merry Christmas.
Okay. All right.
All right, here we go. Mark, thank you so much for being with us. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Jerry. God bless.
Okay, bye-bye.